I'm speaking from the Bible, but also from Graham's anointed iPad. I thought that was a good thing to do. I was going to speak from my iPad until I discovered I'd left it at home. But fortunately, I had sent it to Graham. So there we go. You may recall that we're in the Acts of the Apostles each Sunday around this time. And there are some recurring themes in the Acts of the Apostles. They pop up all the time. There are many references to miracles and to preaching with boldness. These all began from the time when, on the day of Pentecost, the disciples were filled with the Holy Spirit. And after that, there are many references to miracles and bold preaching. There's many references to the believers being together and praying and fellowshipping together, sharing everything that they have, having meals together. And there's also many references to people being added to the church. But there's also significant references to the believers being persecuted. Last week, you may recall, Janet was talking about Paul and Silas when they were in prison. They were singing praises and praying to God in the middle of the night, and there was an earthquake, and you know the story. But we're going back a few chapters now, and we're in chapter 12, and this is another account of prison. This time it's Peter in prison, and this is probably the third time that Peter has been in prison. So it wasn't a regular and familiar experience, but it wasn't the first time. You may recall that when Peter and John had healed the man on their way into the temple, the crippled man, that after that, the Jewish authorities sent for them because they weren't happy. And they had them in prison. And they were cautioned not to speak about Jesus anymore. They didn't actually do that, of course, but that was what they were told. And then there's another occasion when they upset the religious leaders. It says the apostles made the religious leaders jealous because they performed many miracles. And so they ended up in prison again. And on this occasion, an angel opens the door and lets them out and tells them to go back to the temple to preach some more. And after that, they give you a bit of detail. The authorities didn't realise at first that they'd gone. So they got all the court together and then they sent someone to go and fetch them. And they found all the doors were locked, but they actually weren't in there. And so they were a bit puzzled by this. And then someone popped in and said, actually, I've just seen them. They're preaching in the temple. So that was a bit of an interesting time. Well, we're here again. There have been other persecutions. There's been Stephen arrested, put in prison, and then stoned to death. And there's also been, after that, Saul, little verse that I don't think I'd ever noticed before in chapter 8, where he says Saul goes from house to house dragging the believers off to prison. Just one little line, but could have been a lot of believers dragged off to prison. But then we get to chapter 12, and this is Luke enjoying telling us a great story. He wasn't there, because later in Acts, he was there and he starts saying, we did this, we did that. But this is before he joined in with any of these adventures. And he's obviously heard this story reported. And it's, you could just tell he's enjoying the story. I'll tell you a couple of stories that you might enjoy. Graham was bringing Noah back to Kirkby from our house. And if you've come from Ravenshead to Kirkby, you will know there are several sets of traffic lights. And one of these lights, as Graham approached, just was on the point of changing to red, but obviously not soon enough for Graham to feel the need to stop. And then there was another light further down, and it really did go red, and Graham really did have to stop. And Graham said to Noah something like, oh, yes, you have to stop at red lights, don't you? And Noah said, you didn't stop at the last one, Grandad. So that was a story. I thought you would enjoy that story. I've got another little story. You may know I'm involved with the Ravenshead Day Centre, and I'm one of the directors there, and it provides great facilities for the older folks in Ravenshead. There was one day when I delivered some of the older folks to there, and one of the young volunteers who was looking after the elderly folks there asked me if she could take my coat. She thought I was staying. So that was a nice story, two nice stories. But here is another great story. But it starts, again, with persecution. And it starts with King Herod this time. So we're not with the Jewish authorities. We're actually with a Roman official, King Herod. He's on the warpath. And it just says he arrested some who belonged to the church. And then it says he had James, the brother of John, put to death with the sword. That's all the information we get. This is the story of James and John have appeared right through the Gospels. There were two lads. Zebedee was their dad. And we get to chapter 12. And James is put to death with the sword. No more information. But that's the time that we're talking about, this great story happening. It's because putting James to death pleased the Jews, he arrested Peter and had him put in prison, and he was heavily guarded. Tells you how many soldiers and how many guards were making sure that he didn't get away. And of course, everybody knew what the plan was for Peter. James had just been put to death by the sword. And so there must have been some concern around. If you'd been Peter, I'm not sure whether your focus would have been on James has just been put to death by the sword, or you've been in prison before and you did escape because an angel let you out. So the question is, how did Peter respond? Now, we're only really told one thing about what Peter did. He slept. Now, I'm sure night time is a good time to sleep, and I'm sure it was a good thing to do, but I'm not sure how easy it would be to sleep with yourself shackled to soldiers and with the threat, possibly, of the sword in the morning. I'm a pretty good sleeper. But I think that I might have a few concerns under those circumstances. But Peter sleeps. Now, what's his friend's response? They also know that James has just been killed. And that's going to have a terrible effect on what they think and feel and how they respond. We can't imagine getting together to pray, knowing that last night somebody who's usually here has just been killed by the king. We just can't imagine it. But they've got that in their mind and the possibility that the same thing might happen tomorrow to Peter. And so, what is the church's response? Well, they are gathered together. They are gathered together to pray. They pray earnestly. And I can imagine that you would, wouldn't you? If ever there was a time to pray earnestly, it was then. They pray earnestly. I think they use the same word to describe earnest prayer as the prayer that Jesus prayed in the Garden of Gethsemane. He prayed earnestly too. He prayed earnestly, and then he was taken away to be crucified. And the disciples here are praying earnestly for Peter. They did what was the natural thing. They got together and they prayed. And I wonder what they really thought was going to be the answer to their prayers. There was obviously not any guarantees. I would imagine some people had prayed for James. Anyway, the story goes on. And this is Luke telling the story, Luke at his best. Remember some of Luke's stories. Remember, and there were shepherds in the same country, keeping watch over their flocks by night. That's Luke. He's telling the story. Remember, there was a man who had two sons. That's the beginning of the parable of the prodigal son. Remember, a man was travelling from Jerusalem to Jericho when he fell among thieves. That's the story of the Good Samaritan. Well, this is Luke. This is Luke telling us a great story. And this is how it goes. The night before Herod was to bring Peter to trial, Peter was sleeping between two soldiers, bound with two chains, and two sentries stood guard at the entrance. Suddenly, an angel of the Lord appeared, and the light shone in the cell. He struck Peter on the side and woke him up. Well, there's some information for you. He didn't just say, and Peter woke up. The angel gave him a dig or a poke and woke him up. And he said, quick, get up. And the chains fell off Peter's wrists. I think Luke's enjoyed telling us this, don't you? He's telling us about the angel giving him a nudge. Wake up, wake up. You would have thought it wouldn't have been that difficult to wake him up, but maybe the angel found it a bit more tricky. And then the angel gave him full instructions about what he was to wear. Now, that can only be an angel, can't it? Or else it can only be somebody who's half asleep. Or else somebody who's a bit clueless at that particular moment. So the angel says to him, put your clothes and sandals on. No, he said, put on your clothes and sandals, actually. And Peter did so. And then there were a few more instructions. Wrap your cloak around you and follow me, the angel told him. So Peter followed him out of prison. But he had no idea what the angel was doing, that what the angel was doing was really happening. He thought he was seeing a vision. Luke must have got this information from Peter, because Peter was the only person there who was going to tell the story. But Peter must have expressed that he had the clue what was going on. They passed the first and second guards, and then they came to the iron gate leading to the city. It opened for them by itself, and they went through. Now, there's a thought. This wasn't a supermarket gate, door. When you walked towards it, it opened. This was an iron gate, and could have been a problem, but not to the angel. They walked through, and when they'd walked the length of the street, suddenly the angel left him. And it was then that Peter really woke up, worked out what was going on, and said, "Now I know that without a doubt the Lord has sent his angel and rescued me from Herod's clutches and from everything the Jewish people were anticipating." That was a good moment for Peter when he realised what was really, really going on. Now, what's the first thing Peter does? Well, it's the thing that the believers have been doing all the way through Acts at every opportunity. He went to the house where the believers were gathered to pray. He obviously knew where they were, and he went to the house of Mary, the mother of John, who was also called Mark, where many people gathered and were praying. And he did what you would expect. He knocked at the door. And the servant girl, Rhoda, she came to answer the door. And when she recognised Peter's voice, she was overjoyed. Well, you would be, wouldn't you? She was very excited. So excited that, of course, she ran back and forgot to open the door. I think Luke's enjoying telling us that on this occasion, she wasn't that bright. It just went straight out of her mind that perhaps the best thing to do was to open the door and not leave Peter standing outside knocking and probably at risk, because as soon as he was discovered that he wasn't there, they were going to be after him. But no, she rushes inside, all excited. And she ran back exclaiming, "Peter's at the door!" Now, you'd have thought somebody would have said, "Well, where is he?" And she goes, "He's at the door." You thought somebody would say, "Well, go and let him in then." You know, they didn't tell her she was silly for not letting him in. They told her that she was mad. "Don't be so silly. Can't be Peter. We're praying for Peter. That's why we're having this prayer meeting. It's because he's in prison. He's not at the door. He's in prison. Don't be stupid." And they said, "It must be his angel." That's not very helpful, is it? So there's Peter out there, keeps on knocking. And when they opened the door and saw him, they were astonished. They were very surprised that God had answered their prayers and he was there. I think sometimes we're a bit surprised when God answers our prayers, but Luke doesn't try to hide it and try and make it sound spiritual or, you know, there's some other reason for it. He tells us. They were amazed. They'd been praying and God did it. Wow. They were very surprised. They obviously expressed their surprise quite loudly, because Peter then says, motion to them with his hand, shh, says, "Be quiet." And then he describes to them the story that I've just described to you of how he'd been let out of prison by an angel. And he says, "Tell James and the brothers about this." This is James, the brother of Jesus, that he's going to be told what's happened. He wants the people there to know. And then he left for another place. And while most of the first 12 chapters of Acts have been all about Peter and what he did, Peter's hardly mentioned again, except that we do know that he was one of the key players in the Jerusalem church. He was one of the people with responsibility back in Jerusalem at the church there. And he does have key responsibilities that are mentioned later on in Acts. But that really is just the end of the story of Peter and his escape from prison. There is one more thing that happens after that. in the morning in the prison, there was no small commotion among the soldiers as to what had become of Peter. After Herod had a thorough search made for him and did not find him, he cross-examined the guards and ordered them to be executed. So there was absolutely no doubt what his plan was for Peter. And now the guards instead are executed because they've neglected their duty. There's a little postscript about Herod. Herod, who started this chapter off in charge and persecuting Christians and killing James and having Peter thrown in prison. There's a little postscript about him. He went away after that. I think one of the versions suggests that he'd had enough, and he went away for a while. And then he was on one occasion dressed in his royal robes, addressing the people. And the people said to him, "Oh, this is the voice of a god, not of man." And because he doesn't say, no, I'm giving praise to God, which he wouldn't, would he? An angel of the Lord struck him down and he dies. And if you want to know all the gory details, you have to look at the end of chapter 12. Luke was a doctor, don't forget. So, some of the things we can take away from the story. Peter's response to trouble. Now, there are many responses that we can have when we're in trouble. Peter's response was to sleep. That's a possibility. I think he did know that God was in charge. He must have known. He must have experienced a great sense of God's peace. Otherwise, I don't think he would have been asleep. Of course, Paul and Silas, Janet told us last week, they sang and praised God. That was another response. The response of his friends when he was in trouble, their response, of course, was to pray. That was the first thing that they did. They got together. Well, perhaps that was the first thing they did. I don't know. I suppose they prayed as they got together. But the first thing they wanted to do was to be together. The fellowship of the believers must have been very important to them, especially at times like this. And so they wanted to be together and they wanted to earnestly pray. And of course, when Peter gets out of prison, the first thing he wants to do is to be with his friends. He wants to be with them, to tell them what's going on. And I think that's a challenge to us, is how important is our fellowship together? It's the first thing. It's not something that they do if they can fit it in. It's very, very important. I think they realised how much God had called them to be together and how much they were going to benefit from that. And, of course, what's God's response to the situation? Well, I don't know whether you've noticed, but you can never, ever guarantee God's response. You can never say, we'll pray like this, and then God will. But God did respond in a miraculous way. And the angel and the earthquake from last time, they were God's response. And they'd seen many miracles before this, but this miracle, they were still surprised at God's response. And the thing they did, probably quite noisily, was rejoice. Was rejoice at God's response. The angel had let Peter out of prison. If you notice, they didn't make an awful lot of James's death. We didn't get a lot of information about that. That was just recorded. But the details that we get about God's act in bringing Peter out of prison, we've got all the details right down to him putting his sandals on and later on his robe, right down to Peter knocking, right down to Rhoda being excited and not letting him in, Peter still knocking, right down to Peter raising his hand and going, shh, when they get all excited. We've got all the details, the story of what God has done, an amazing amount of detail. And they don't even mind telling us that the believers didn't believe it had happened. Believers didn't believe. They were surprised. They weren't sure at first that Rhoda was telling the truth. So I think for us, I think we need to encourage ourselves, encourage one another, to expect God to answer our prayers, to pray earnestly, to expect God to perform miracles among us, and also that we will rejoice when he does, and we'll be pleased to tell the stories.